biggest march in the history of the state of Utah. KSL-TV, whoops, they forgot to cover it at 10. This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
The legislative session is underway, and Speaker Greg Hughes declares that homelessness is a statewide issue. Take that, county mayor, Salt Lake City mayor, you better get it done. It's Representative McKay on the right.
Trump pulls out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Will it hurt Utah? I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news. Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner here on Capitol Hill, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I have on my right someone who represents the political left, Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Good morning. Hi, everybody.
We're going to have to fix that, Jim, because on my left is Representative Dan McKay.
It's the only time I've ever been to Natalie's left.
Listen, you guys, I am an outsider. I am not on Capitol Hill every day, and you guys are just pumping with energy of all the things happening here. So I feel a little bit, in a secondary position.
But you just look innocent and happy.
We should say where we are.
We're here in the Capitol. We're looking down State Street.
Yeah. Our producer, Ross Chambliss, has brought in all this portable electronic equipment, and we're bringing it to you from Capitol Hill. So good stuff. So, guys, but even though I am not on the Hill, I did listen and pay attention to what Speaker Hughes said on the opening day of the session. Wow, he had some passion behind his speech.
Does he ever not have passion? I mean, that's what, honestly, the reason I love having Greg as a speaker is he doesn't go halfway with anything.
Yeah. Yeah, this guy's full of energy. But he spoke specifically and drew the line in the sand about homeless services in this state, declared it a state issue.
If it's a state issue, then let's have the state come up and put a lot more dough into it. I mean, they've gone halfway. They've said, we want you to do this. We want you to do that. We want you to do this. Look, there is no commitment to ongoing operating. And there isn't enough money to build the shelters that are out there. So I'm appreciative of what's there. It's a good recognition. But as Joe Biden always said, show me your budget and I'll show you your priorities. We need a lot more money out
Dan,
of the state of
Utah.
I
want you to weigh in, but I just can't help but say when the Speaker of the House, who's a Republican, makes it a feature point of his opening remarks, the money's coming.
Yeah, I don't
I mean, the Republicans are very productive here, Jim. Don't poo-poo this leadership our Speaker's showing.
Thank you. Yeah, finally, Jim.
I'm speechless.
Yeah. Hey, we got it. It's the first time.
We got Jim speechless.
Write it down.
Hey, guys. Other things. Speaker Hughes, I guess, has pushed back against allegations he was involved in the Swallow scandal. You guys know more about
this than
I do.
Ridiculous.
Set it up, Dan.
Ridiculous. So everybody knows, and we knew kind of coming into the session, that one of the sideshow freak shows, in my opinion, mm-hmm. that was going to be going on during the session was going to be the Swallow trial. It's crazy that that's
couple of weeks away.
Airways. Yeah, it's a couple of weeks away. But they had a pretrial hearing, and they have this guy out testifying on an engineer on an evidentiary hearing, and this guy just starts dropping unsubstantiated bombs as though they were truth. And initially, everybody kind of started reporting that there was it seemed like there was some truth to it, or they were anyways. I was extremely frustrated because I'm watching this. And you're trying to work on policy issues. You just gave a rousing speech about issues that we're actually going to tackle this session and work on. And then we have to deal with sideshows like that.
Jim, did the term have pelican in it, I heard you talking about?
Yeah, it's a long, twisted story.
Anything in politics that has pelican in it isn't good. So please explain to our
listeners. I'll be brief. Look, there's two things I want to say. Shurtleff and Swallow were up to it. Shurtleff has already got off. Swallow is definitely going to be the fall guy. We don't know what's going to happen, but keep your eye on it, and I'll keep you informed as to what the real truth is. Look, let's face it. Greg's politics are all wrong, but he had nothing ever whatsoever to do with this, and I have never seen a speaker do what he did, and it was just cool. We're just trying to have our caucus as Democratic senators in barges a speaker, and he says, can I speak to you? And we say yes. He sits down, and he just lays it out and says, I had nothing to do with this. It is exactly what the lawyers would tell somebody never do, even if you're innocent. Just keep your mouth shut. You know, put out press releases.
I don't see Hughes as the kind of guy that listens
not
to attorneys.
Hughes. He's out there punching within minutes of this thing going, and I love that in leadership. You know where the guy stands. Amen to Greg Hughes. He usually stands in the wrong place, but at least he's there standing.
You go, Greg. Jim, I want to ask you about this. Representative Norm Thurston, he's a good friend of mine, but he has put forward a bill that would remove some of the political party representation requirements on boards and commissions. In other words, sometimes on boards you have to have so many Republicans, so many Democrats, and he wants to do away with that. What do you think?
You know, it's just part of this smugness that leads to a fall.
Mm-hmm.
The Republicans up here, by and large, don't understand. They forgot the other half of the Federalist Papers. This was not a group of men who sat down and agreed on everything and thought that was wonderful and didn't really want to hear another opinion. They don't understand.
But it was nonpartisan.
In the Utah legislature, they don't understand that democracy only works when all the ideas are thrown out. And there's this kind of priesthood complex that we dare not. It's fine in a church. It really is. But they take that experience in and they apply it to government. And they don't want to hear another position. And that's exactly what's happening here. They did it with executive appropriations. They did it last time with executive management so that they have control over every argument, every debate, almost every voice. That's what this is. They want one-party rule on every board and every commission. It's pathetic.
I thought you would say that, Jim. And Dan, do you want to have any kind of rebuttal?
Yeah, it's ridiculous, Jim. Jim, you're preposterous.
Okay.
You're ludicrous. You're, yeah. So, okay, but think about this. Okay, so I've noticed, I've served now on several boards and committees up here on the House, as a member of the House. The ones that have a public partisan position for appointment, the boards and the policy tends to divide along partisan lines. For the boards that do not have partisan affiliation, it's amazing. There's talk about policy and less about partisanship.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen that over and over from the Tax Review Commission. I've seen it over and over from you just issue by issue. I don't know what party any of those people belong to, and I love the fact that we focus on policy instead
of the
other way.
Tax Review Commission, for example. Mm-hmm. There is consensus, and there is love, and there is harmony, and there is unity because
there's no prize.
Because the partisans get together and they all think alike. When you're having a state tax review commission, you need somebody with another point of view. There isn't always just one point of view. So your solution of appointing all people that think alike betrays democracy. And that's exactly what the Republicans are trying to do. They don't want any Democrats. They don't want any opposition.
Now, you're on that committee. I'm just going to give you a hard time because you are on that committee.
Only because I have to be.
And every time we have put forth a bill that we have taken to the legislature, you have supported it with the group. So despite the fact that there has been a groupthink, you can go back and look at every one of those bills that come out of the Tax Review Commission. You've supported them all.
Because
not because it's a bad policy, not because it's a different policy, and not because it's a partisan issue. It's because it's the right thing to do, and it's nonpartisan. And I think that's a better way to chase policy than partisanship.
But the only reason I'm sitting there is because they had to appoint me.
That's a good point, Jim.
I'm there. And my perspective, because I'm there and because I'm saying things counter to almost everybody else there, it changes the makeup of the sausage. And that's what's needed more of in government, not more little robots that all vote the way that, because they all, but I don't mean to demean them, although it sounds like that. You appoint people with the same philosophy and you end up with the same stuff. It's bad for our state.
I've obviously hit a soft spot, a tender spot, really between both of you, and I just have to say that it does trouble me when a party majority keeps making more and more power for themselves. I think you have to think very carefully about that. I also think, though, that people should be put on boards and commissions for merit, not for partisan reasons. So this is a tricky one. Maybe it's not all of them. And yeah, maybe you try and get a few of them. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm joined by Representative Dan McKay and Senator Jim DeBacchus. In our next segment, we're going to talk about Mike Noel chasing the BLM director job.
Proudly on the left.
And Dan McKay.
Sheepishly on the right.
Juxtaposition. Natalie Gochner in the political center. And I'm proud to represent the productive middle, which drives my two colleagues here nuts when I say that. Hey, we got a lot of things to talk about, but I want to talk about the marches that occurred this week all around the world, around the country, and here in our rotunda. You gentlemen were here. I was not, but apparently a lot of people of my gender were in the rotunda wearing their pink hats and saying their things. What was it like?
I hardly notice.
Oh, come on. I worked up here long enough to know what it's like when there are a lot of people.
Well, and my office is here in the rotunda. It was so doggone loud.
Yeah, the just the acoustics of the rotunda. What was it like, guys?
I didn't know there was a rally.
Oh, you guys. Listen, I was walking around. Was it Monday? It was Monday, right? So on Tuesday, I'm like, I got my hair cut. The woman who cuts my hair was there. I'm at work. Different people at work said, I took time off. You know, I took it off. I couldn't believe how many people I knew had done it. I had one person tell me, it meant not for me, but for my daughter, and I took her, and I wanted to show her this. So this was powerful.
I talked to the ushers, to the old-timers around here. They said this is by far the largest assembly ever in the history of the Utah State Capitol. And it was, for me, inspiring. For me, there was a moment where I looked around and I got emotional. And I said, you know, every time I'm standing there, every time I'm saying something in a committee, surrounded by a lot of times people that totally disagree with me and can't and have a difficult time listening to somebody say something that is in opposition to what they're saying, it reminded me that for the first time in the 5 years I've been up here, that I felt at home in this building. I felt like
this is
a moment. These are my people. This is who I represent. It was a great moment personally, yeah. And I think hopefully a turning point in the politics of Utah and in the country.
Dan, did it get you emotional like it got Jim? And secondly, did your wife talk to you about it? What did your wife say about it? I'm guessing you didn't get emotional. I was kind of setting you up on that.
I was going to say, like Jim once said. Remember when Jim once said, Dan is like your logical neighbor. You know, just a robot logical neighbor guy.
And
right?
Jim's like your lover.
Yeah. Well, not
lover. I know. I knew what I was saying.
His lover would agree. So what I would say, though, is I thought it was really fascinating. You know, we watched it out the front windows. It was coming up the hill, and then as they started pouring into the doors, it got louder, and it was kind of an interesting crescendo. And I do agree with Jim. I thought it was a record crowd for anything I've seen as far as the displays. My problem is the same problem I have, honestly, with liberal policy today. They learned nothing from this last presidential election. You could look throughout the plaza and, you know, into the chamber. Nobody was protesting one specific issue. There were, you know, 10, 20, I don't know, 30 different issues if you look at different signs and that kind of stuff. And some of the signs were somewhat vulgar. And granted, they were trying to grab Trump-isms that, you know, he'd said in, you know, whatever videos or
he makes
or
it
comments,
easy.
That kind
of
thing. Makes it easy. So they had kind of stooped to his level, I think, which is, in my opinion, is not what I picture femininity or women to be about.
Sure.
So they kind of grabbed some of his catchphrases and they threw that on their signs. And in my opinion, I think when they go down, in my opinion, to that level, I think it hurts their cause, one. Two, there was no, like, this is our cause and this is why we're marching. And it wasn't like a single subject to make a difference. And it was such a diverse pile of issues that there was nothing actually that was going to happen out of it other than, and, you know, my intern pointed to me that there is a social nature to it, and it is good to get together with others, and I could see why Jim would get emotional that way.
Could I say my two favorite signs?
Yeah, but allow me just real quickly I just want to challenge Dan on the point that that's what I thought was the beauty of it, is that it was not a single issue thing. I loved that it was just a spontaneous, organic kind of reaction to the way we feel.
and the way people feel in this country right now. So for me, you know, I'm a policy wonk. I love economics. I'd be there not for any of the feminist things, although I think Trump should apologize, and I don't believe in that he's a man of character. I mean, all those things aside, I don't like some of his policies.
But is this different than September 12th, 2009, where just after that summer, Obamacare had passed, and you've got a million plus people marching on the Washington Mall?
Yeah.
And that was the birth of the Tea Party.
Sure.
It was the same movement, the same motion.
I think
motion,
it has some of that, but I will tell you that the cross-section of people involved in this – so there's a professor at a Ivy League school that started a spreadsheet of the tallies of all the people that have marched, you know, how many showed up. And I printed it. It's 17 pages long, very small print. Basically, every city in the country of any size had this happen. And then, as you know, major world cities all around the world did. There is a reaction to what we've seen happen in this country. And I, you know, I don't think you can put your finger on it. Yeah, meaning okay. like that it's this issue or that issue. It's more the notion that we've elected somebody who's just changed the world as we know it. So, Jim, read us your favorite signs.
I've seen...
Keep it clean, Jim.
I've seen better cabinets at IKEA.
Oh, at IKEA, yeah. That's a good one.
The other one, Malia, blink twice if you want us to rescue you.
Pretty
That's
good.
Terrible.
Pretty good. Hey, let's talk about Trump's first week. And as we do that, we've talked about all these Utahns that maybe could get a deal in the Trump administration. Hasn't happened for Speaker Hughes. Didn't happen for Mitt Romney. Didn't happen for Congressman Stewart, Secretary of the Air Force. Rob Porter got a really important job.
Massachusetts guy, though.
Yeah, I mean, Senator Hatch is chief of staff, but he's a Mass guy. So we've still got this Mike Noel chance.
Well, and you got Sean Reyes, too.
Tell our listeners the
lingering out there. So Mike Noel is a possibility.
Kane County guy.
Yeah, Kane County guy represents the rural part of Utah, and the Trump administration is looking for someone specifically to run the Bureau of Land Management. Right. So there's that, and then you've got the Federal Trade Commission, which is reportedly looking at Attorney General Sean Reyes.
You know, if Reyes got that job, that would shake up some politics here in a really interesting way.
You know, we're down to the D-level choices, and there's still not one Utahn picked. Yeah. I've sent my resume in last week. I'm thinking, what the hell?
This
You're going to pick some Utahn.
Yeah, this is an East Coast. I mean, this is a cabinet that doesn't understand Utah issues, in my judgment. Cabinet
zero.
Points.
Utah,
yeah.
You got nothing out of Trump. We don't even have an usher at the White House yet.
So, Jim, there's been all these executive orders. He's rolling out a couple a day. And, you know, whether it's the wall or whether it's – I mean, he's just taking what he campaigned on, and he's making it real.
No, I disagree. I disagree with the orders, but I think in a way it's fair. But what Obama did by executive order, he has every right. He won the election to go in and unorder. Right. The legal right, morally. I, you know what I liked about Ronald Reagan? There was a core there. You know where he was going. Yeah. You knew what he believed, and you know if he got elected, that's what you were going to get. Now, you're going to get a lot of naps, and he wasn't really going to understand much beyond a 3x5 car.
On.
But you got a real you got a real philosophy surrounded by a lot of really smart people that were going to bring the policy. With Trump, what the heck? Nobody knows what's going on, and he doesn't seem to have picked the best people around him. So it just seems really dangerous.
So I watched what he did with the EPA, and I walked to work every day for a year to EPA. You know, and spent 12 hours a day there. I mean, I was a good public servant at EPA, and I know a lot about the career service workforce there. And the idea that the president is going to muzzle the career employees at EPA, good luck. So, you know, he basically
says, the best thing I've heard in a long time.
Well, he says, no more Facebook, no more tweeting. You can't do any, you know, press conferences, no public statements until we talk. And it's sort of like, so Dan, think of it this way.
Yeah, but
I'm saying to Dan, because he's in the majority party and they have control around here. But EPA is about the size of the state of Utah in terms of the budget and the number of employees.
Okay.
But basically all the employees are one party.
Yeah.
And they all believe in protecting, you know, human health as their top. It's their religion.
So don't you think there's going to be
change?
They
don't they don't like their administrator and they don't like their president, and they'll do whatever they want
to subvert and
yeah, that figure out
okay,
ways.
So, but I'm going to turn the table.
Yeah,
you've been in the executive branch, sure, both at the state and at the federal level.
Right, right.
And I'm going to ask you at the state level, when you have an opposite opinion of the governor, mm-hmm, and you want to take your department in a different direction, how does that go for you?
Oh yeah. Well, so I have always been a political appointee. Yeah. I've never been career service, never been protected. And so, you know, I know who I work for.
Yeah.
If you're in political service, you leave or you're loyal.
But
now keep in mind, I don't mean that you do illegal things ever. Yeah. But I mean, you know who was elected. You tell them exactly what you think, but you know they were elected and you know they get to make the decisions. And it's a mark of your professionalism to help guide them, but to be loyal.
Well, and which is fine, but let's just take it one step further. You're the head of the department.
Yeah.
While you're a political appointee, you're a head of the department. And the career service people, whether they are protected or not, mm-hmm, or it's tougher to get rid of them or whatever it might be, there's still an eggshell element when you're a career service employee working for a political appointee, because you know you're walking on the same eggshells as your boss.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let me ask you.
And that's why when you hear Trump talk about, we could see as much as 75% reduction in federal government employees, right? When you hear things like that.
This is why nobody showed up at the inaugural, by the way, because they all live there, and yeah, they don't support this man.
They're all taking a nap.
How does it,
like
how
Reagan.
Does it,
they're all looking for work.
How does it work, Natalie, when the entire arm, how many workers at the EPA?
Let's say 25,000.
Okay, if the 25,000 workers mentally kind of shut off, what can a director do? You know what I mean? I'm not saying they should or shouldn't, but I mean,
yeah, it's not great leadership, right? Because they're professionals and they know their stuff, and you need to, the mark of leadership is to get from those people the things that you need to get to, you know, to run this country. And when you just alienate them and give them no incentive to work with you well, you've just set yourself up for failure, in my judgment.
The top five, no matter how much control they have from the top.
You need to keep a real good conversation going. You know, you have to bring them in the room, and you can't build a wall away from them, right? And so the worst thing that happens in Washington is when the political appointees just sit there and do everything without some of the good feedback of those seasoned professionals. Now, don't get me wrong, there's bureaucrats, but then there's seasoned professionals in government.
Seasoned professionals. Sounds like bureaucrats to me. in fact, I'm going to look it up on Urban Dictionary. I'm
so
pretty sure
you know what you need to look
synonymous.
Up, Dan? Look up senior executive service. Because what you learn in Washington is there's a core of people who you know, it's like the Russian Tsar said, I don't rule Russia, 10,000 clerks do. Mm-hmm. But there is a status in Washington of people who know how to respect who was elected, but help them understand the laws and science and things of this land, senior executive service. And to the degree that Trump alienates them, it'll be really hard for him to be successful.
Have you asked any of your buddies that are back there?
EPA,
you
know? Haven't.
Huh.
Yeah,
curious.
I haven't. I'm curious, but it just happened this week, so busy. Haven't done it. Hey, so we also have Trump pulling out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and Derek Miller, the director of the World Trade Center, Utah, making the point that exports make up about 22% of our economy. So this is where it starts to get serious, Dan and Jim, because you have a president who is making policies that could hurt Utah.
So there is not a more conservative group in this state than the Utah Farm Bureau. I mean, you look at their annual conventions, and I won't even go anymore because there is not a Democrat on a panel as a moderator, as an usher. They are red meat. They are just as conservative a group as there is, mm-hmm, in the state. They got their guy. Now I want to see what's going to happen, because if Trump says 30% import on Chinese stuff and on Japanese and on Asian stuff, guess what's going to happen to their products?
It's a big deal.
Utah farmers are going to suffer big time from Mr. Trump and the Trans-Pacific breakdown, or not the Trans-Pacific, the
NAFTA,
what do you call it? The trade deal in the Pacific.
Yeah,
they are
TPP.
Not Utahns are going to get hammered by it. And you know what I say? It's your president. You elected him. Revel in
smiling.
It.
Hey, we have to go to gripes. But Dan, do you want to say anything more about that?
No, he's just wrong. Hillary Clinton would have done. Hillary Clinton would have stepped back from TPP as well.
Yeah.
There's problems fundamentally with how that deal's set up, and she was going to step back from it too.
Jim, do you have a gripe for us today?
Yeah, my gripe goes to my good friends at KSL TV. the biggest rally in the history of the state of Utah at 10 o'clock. Oh, they forgot to have any coverage at all. Deseret News got a good job. The other television stations, KSL Television, oh, well, we didn't know that it happened, I guess.
How do you even know that, Jim? You don't watch KSL, do you?
I watch KSL.
Okay, Dan, do you have a
That's
gripe?
Impressive. Well, I never thought that snow would ever be a problem, right?
But
we have a lot. And if you look at the amount of water that we're getting here in the state, we're approaching record levels, right, as far as where our reservoirs are. And you look at California, who is like at 200% of their snow and water. And Utah is smart. We've got reservoirs. We've got storage. My beef is California has very little. And they're going to put it all back in the ocean, and then they're going to be complaining in 6 months when they have no water.
Trying to take our water.
Yes.
Yeah.
Same
That's a good
deal.
Gripe. My gripe, I'm going to pick on the Zion Curtain just because I've been in the Eccles Theater multiple times now. I'll be there again this afternoon. And
I mean the Zion Ceiling.
The Zion Ceiling, excuse me, but under the mantra of the Zion Curtain. I think it's going to go this session, Jim.
It's definitely going, but there's a screwy trade-off. We can talk about it next week, I guess.
I love it.
Ooh,
join
a
us.
Teaser.
Join us on both sides of the aisle. I've been joined by Representative Dan McKay and Senator Jim DeBacchus. The program is produced by Ross Chambliss from Capitol Hill. Thanks for listening.